Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am your host, Tinfoil Tom, and you've landed yourself in the middle of unbelievable mysteries. As a friendly reminder, I'd like to ask that if you were listening on Apple Podcasts, that you kindly rate and review the show. Check out the Patreon for the program. New rules of Tinfoil aren't cheap, and every dollar helps find the truth. We'll be right back after this quick word from our sponsor, Anchor. Hello and welcome back to Unbelievable Mysteries. I am your host, Tinfoil Tom, and thank you for tuning into today's episode on the incredible case of James Leninger. I think that most of us tend to consider our own mortality at certain points, whether it be after a tragedy occurs or a prolonged illness. Sometimes we face this as our time starts to grow shorter as we get older. Whatever the cause, it is something that I've invested some interest in, and I have found a peculiar case that makes me more so consider, is there a life again after death? Join me, won't you, as we discuss the otherworldly tale of James Leninger. James Leninger was born April 10th, 1998, to Bruce and Andrea Leninger. Everything was normal in James's childhood, and nothing would indicate he was anything more than a healthy child in a seemingly happy household. Then, at 22 months old, while visiting the James Kavanaugh Flight Museum in Dallas, something seemed to click in young James's mind. He became transfixed on the aircraft in the museum, particularly the World War II-era aircraft. So fixated on the aircraft, as a matter of fact, that his father had to force the young boy to leave the museum. This, by itself, would not be that unusual, but then more strange occurrences began to occur. When James had turned two, he began to have vivid nightmares that, to him, were incredibly realistic and profoundly terrifying. In his sleep, he would thrash around and scream, "Airplane crash! Plane on fire! Little man can't get out!" As he would thrash, he would also kick his feet, as if trying to eject from the canopy of an aircraft. Around this time, he also began crashing his toy planes into furniture, smashing off their propellers. And he would also draw aerial battles with World War II-era aircraft. This, in and of itself, isn't insane, but it is odd. Keep in mind, this was now in the early 2000s. World War II had ended more than a half century before. Something particularly odd about these drawings is that he signed them all as James III. Did that indicate his age? When his father asked him what the three meant, he replied simply that he's the third James. Weird. Very, very weird, I know. He also knew information about World War II-era aircraft that such a young child shouldn't really know, at least not in depth, such as correcting his mother when she pointed out a bomb, quote-unquote, on a toy plane, to which he correctly stated, "That's not a bomb, Mommy. That's a drop tank." Heck, I liked aircraft as a kid. I like aircraft now. And when I was a kid, and even now, I still don't know what a drop tank is. James, however, as they would later find out, was indeed correct. Around this time, the most compelling evidence to date occurred too. Complex details about who he might have been. He told his parents that he had been a pilot named James and he had flown a Corsair. Corsair is a type of World War II era aircraft. He said he was stationed on a ship called the Natoma that he insisted was American. And James had had a friend on board named Jack Larson. And finally, that he had been killed in action near Iwo Jima. Keep in mind, this was a toddler with this information. Things did not stop there. Bruce had finally decided that he needed to investigate what his son was saying, as it was far too compelling not to look into. When most kids in the 2000s were happy enough talking about the latest episode of Power Rangers, here we had a toddler telling his parents details of things he could not have possibly known. What Bruce found out next was nothing short of bone-chilling. It turns out everything young James had been saying was true. A ship called the Natoma Bay had been deployed for the Battle of Iwo Jima, and a pilot named Jack Larson had served on that ship. While poring over records, Bruce found the man they had been looking for, James McCready Houston Jr., who had been declared KIA while a pilot serving on the Natoma Bay. The only detail that seemingly didn't fit the narrative was that he had been killed while piloting an FM-2 Wildcat. However, later evidence would show that Houston had indeed piloted Corsairs earlier in the war. Testimony would also show that Houston's fighter had indeed been set on fire and sank into the sea, thus proving young James's vision to be true. Houston had presumably been alive when his plane was hit, and was unable to eject from his aircraft before it sank into the ocean, sealing his fate. Sometime later, James was able to recognize a fellow serviceman of Houston's by voice only. As the man that he'd met had aged by more than 50 years, he recognized this person by name. This was during a reunion for the Natoma Bay. The man, Bob Greenwalt, was obviously very surprised, but delighted. In addition, James Houston's sister was in attendance at this reunion of GIs. Incredibly, young James was able to say her name wasn't Anne, it's Annie. She had been introduced to him as Anne, and that he'd had an older sister named Ruth, in addition to numerous other details about James's childhood. His other childhood, that is. Young James would continue having visions, mostly on the anniversary of Houston's death, and had two or more startling revelations. The first revelation is that he had actually chosen his parents as the ones he wanted to be with when he was reincarnated. And the second revelation, that his G.I. Joes that he often played with, whom he had named Billy, Walter, and Leon, had been named for a reason. His parents asked why, and he said simply, "Because that's who met me when I got to heaven." They were named after James Houston's real-life friends, Leon Connor, Walter Devlin, and Billy Peeler, who had died prior to Houston's own death while serving together on the Natoma Bay. There are some other details to this incredible story, which I encourage you to look into. James has let his past life go and is seemingly at peace with both his past and his future. He has now made the journey to pay his respects to the final resting place of James Houston, and perhaps that's all James really wanted, to be remembered, and to serve as a reminder that no one ever really dies, and that we all may have the chance to get another chance at life. Now, do I believe that reincarnation exists? What about the critics who might say that the parents coached this child into what he was saying? The things he allegedly saw, to think that everyone, the former servicemen and women, the relatives, the parents, etc., were all coached or coerced, I think in this case is ludicrous. In this case has statements from mostly, if not all, credible folks. If you ask me, I think this is one of the strongest cases of reincarnation I've ever seen come across my desk in the tinfoil bunker, and that we all may go on to have more adventures after this one. Today's episode was a really fun one. This was a very, very curious case, and I think one of the strongest cases of reincarnation I've ever come across. Thank you for listening to today's show. I have been your host, Tinfoil Tom, reminding you to keep searching for the truth. Take care, everyone. We'll talk again very soon. Bye-bye. If you like the show or have suggestions and/or comments, be sure to leave a message for the show via the Anchor app. And if you'd like to help support future content, consider supporting the Patreon for the podcast. Link for that is in the show notes.